Tasting Rum Radio's 2021 Okanagan Reconnect is presented by the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association, home to over 90 communities and over 200 wineries. TOTA is proud to share with the world this beautiful place they call home, asking our guests to travel respectfully and responsibly so that this region may be enjoyed by all who live and visit for years to come. This is week 5 of the Okanagan Reconnect on Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. You can find all the details, all the links you need at tastingroomradio.com, which is found on our home website of mulliganstew.ca. We are presented, as we have been for the last 5 weeks, by the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association. We thank them. We'll give many thanks, personal thanks, to the people who helped us accomplish this five-week epic at the end of this particular show. And where are we? Well, we're going to be at Moon Cursor in Osoyoos. That's our home base. And we actually stayed there. The Hideaway was the original home for Beta and Chris Tolley, the owners of Moon Cursor. So they're going to be on the show. They're going to open the show, a two-parter. And then a conversation with Dan and Carol Scott, who are the very passionate owners of Lariana Cellars, literally on the border in Osoyoos. What a wonderful, incredible winery this is as well. Small, you got to go looking for it, but well worth it. And then finally, we're going to finish with a very emotional conversation with Paula Cooper, who for 10 years was the assistant winemaker for Sandra Ofield at Tinhorn Creek. When Tinhorn was sold, she moved on to C.C. Yench and learned for 8 years from the master, Chris Yench. Because of Chris's surprising death, the winery was sold. And the day that we're talking to Paula Cooper, I believe was her last day that the doors were open at C.C. Yench. It's a very emotional conversation, but one I wanted to have just to pay tribute to her, her work, her wines, Chris Yench and C.C. Yench, and where she was headed next. So that'll finish the show. 5 weeks in the Okanagan, reconnecting with the help of our friends at TOTA. Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Jason Parks Customs. Jason Parks Customs is a ragtag group of wineries, a cider house, and a brewery calling West Kelowna home. They are The Hatch, Black Sweat Vineyards, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59 Cider House, Smoke Show by JPC, and coming soon, The Hatching Post, a saloon-style brewery, smokery, and ice cream parlor. Just think about it. Details at Jason Parks Customs events. And a final word from JPC. An invite to join them for a safe and happy 2022. This is day 5 of the Okanagan Reconnect. And as I said before, it's been a blur. But one thing that has been clear is that I have friends in the Okanagan, Beta and Chris Tolley at Moon Cursor. They provided a place to sort of do these interviews, well, the ones we did in the South Okanagan. And then at the very end, we get to talk to them. Welcome to your own place. You actually lived here.
We did actually for quite a few years when our kids were younger. This is, we moved here in 2004. That was the beginning of our winery undertaking, and this was home for quite a few years. And then when the kids got a little bit bigger, we moved up to Penticton, so still quite close. We are very lucky right now to have some incredible staff working with us who look after the tasting room and then the operations of the sales function of the winery. So that isn't really so much of a concern anymore, but our little operation from 204 has grown quite a bit, and we're still not large by international standards, but we do in a normal year make about 7,000 cases a year. So it's not something that just two people can look after anymore.
It's what's in those cases that's really important. And one more thing, you talked a couple of days ago, I heard you say when you first started, when you first planted and opened the open business.
Yes.
You said business. you expected to be selling the wines out on a stand, like a lemonade stand out on the highway.
Not quite that rustic, but definitely our enthusiasm for making the best bottle of wine in the world far exceeded our understanding of what that might entail back then. Right now, you know, that was in 04, so we're, 16, 17 years later, things have changed quite a bit. And in all fairness to us, BC wine industry has also changed quite a bit since then, and I'm sure you know that more than many others here. And so, but that was the original vision, quite romantic, completely impractical, but still drove us to do a lot of what we did here. It was going to be Chris and I, you know, making the wine together by the side of the road and then selling it out of what was back then the fruit stand here. We evolved since then. Our vision has definitely evolved and we moved with the times and with our increased understanding of, you know, what it takes to make a good bottle of wine and to sell it. And it's been quite a ride. We've enjoyed it very much.
I knew it was going to be tough to draw her out.
Yeah.
But I think she's doing well.
Well done, sir. I just want to say for the record, I think we had a pretty good idea what we wanted to make and how to do it, but we had no idea about the marketing or how to get it out to customers. And for the record, we never sold a bottle of wine out of a fruit stand.
No, we never did. It was a notion, an idea.
We did have a fruit stand and we did have wine to sell, but we didn't actually combine the two at any point.
And what were your first plantings?
Being wine geeks, we put in 6 varieties on 5 acres. So we put in Roussanne, Marsanne, Viognier, Carmenere, Tempranillo, and Tannat.
Okay. You know that would people around here would have gone, what are they doing?
Yes.
What are they doing?
Yes. Exactly.
First of all, they would have said, why are they planting that many varieties? Any experienced person running a vineyard would be like, it's a 5-acre vineyard, plant one variety. And then the varieties themselves, I'll let Peter talk about it.
Yes, in all fairness to us, on the surface, it does look a little wonky, but there was method to our madness, or so we'd like to think. And the whole idea behind doing what really, in essence, boiled down to a little bit of an experimental vineyard was, point one was, you know, we came to this with love for wine in our hearts. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but that's where we were. And so we were not going to, you know, make wine that everybody else was making because we wanted to satisfy the inner wine geek. But, you know, Chris, and I tip of the hat to my wonderful husband here, Chris did a lot of research into what grape varieties might do well in this great site that we had here, and you were right.
It was a tough time because when we bought some grapes in our very first vintage, because we planted and waiting for our grapes to grow, we had one grower that we talked to and we said, you know, we're interested in buying the grapes. And he said, the red ones or the white ones? And that was about that was indicative of the level of sophistication at that time. But it all stemmed from being in New Zealand and Australia, where in New Zealand we went to school. And in Australia we did extensive touring and in the wine country. And they're very varietal specific there, Shiraz and Cab in Australia and Sauvignon Blanc in New Zealand, and even the most fiercely patriotic Kiwis would occasionally, in fact, Darren, one of the most patriotic, would say, well, can we, you know, have something other than Sauvignon Blanc? Like, it's great, but, you know, we get a little. And so when we arrived here, I was sort of thinking in those terms, and we, you know, in New Zealand, I opened Oz Clark's book and I saw Pinot Gris by Burrowing Owl in the book. And, you know, that was a big lift for us. Oh, look at, you know, we're on the map. And Merlot was obviously king here. So we could have went the route of, well, we'll do an even better Merlot. We'll do an even better Pinot Gris. But, you know, that wasn't sort of our calling to out Pinot Gris or Merlot somebody else. It was to what else do we have? Sort of like the Kiwi experience with Darren saying, well, what else can we do? And even in New Zealand, they're sort of championing Pinot Noir out of Otago, right? And they're expanding into other varieties. And we sort of had that sort of idea. And from Australia, where, you know, they do Shiraz and Cab very well, and everybody knows, you know, Barossa and Connemara. But you're sort of like, well, what are your little projects? What do you got going? What else is there? And so that's what we were thinking. And hoping to find, like Sauvignon Blanc in the New World in New Zealand, the apogee of, you know, Sauvignon Blanc for some people anyway. We're hoping to find a variety that in the Okanagan would be the sort of the same thing. Oh, look at this very awesome interpretation of variety X from the Okanagan.
But you're now known for that. The very things that we've just been talking about, that's what people talk about.
Yes, and there are differences of opinion, you know, depending on who you talk to. There are those who very much champion the idea of a signature grape for the Okanagan Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
We personally feel, okay, I'll speak for myself, but I think you share this opinion. You know, there's so much, so many different microclimates moving north to south in this valley. It almost would be a shame to try and fit just one grape in all that gorgeousness. So, but
how long did it take us, the customer, the wine fan, to get it, to realize what was happening here? How long did that take?
It took a little while. I said when we started, there was sort of open arms from the customers, but when you got to the sommelier level, where somebody's purchasing on behalf of somebody else and they're trying to make good decisions, they were a little bit reticent to just open arm embrace like the customers in BC were. That developed with time, and I guess it should, because, you know, you don't leap on every new thing. And the reputation and the industry was sort of immature at the time, so it took a while.
What was the toughest sell over the counter? Was it the anise? Was it the tannat? What was it?
You know, I don't think I would say that there was any one wine that was a tough sell. I think the challenge for us has always been, because the way, and this is where I sort of, I guess, maybe differ a little bit from Chris, my perception has always been that there's always been that segment of wine lovers who is on a quest to find something new and interesting and unusual quality. We're not talking novelty wine here, but quality wine that is just a little bit of the beaten path. So our challenge has always been to communicate with the customer, to find them and to let them know that we're here. And once they knew that we were here, it was a match made in heaven, because our wines, we do our best to make a really, really good bottle, and the interesting grape varieties contribute so much to that. And so the people who seek that kind of wine out, once they found us, we were friends for life. And so that was always great. Those who maybe aren't quite so interested in wine, who came to our tasting room, it usually came down to basically educating people and saying, this is the Arnaise grape, this is where it comes
from. They walk in and they want a Chardonnay. That's it. And so if you hand them a Viognier or Arnaise or whatever, they want their Chard.
About the wine. Yeah, and so, you know, and again,
but, kudos
but
to But again, it begs the question, why are you tasting? Isn't the whole idea of tasting is to discover new wines and new releases?
To add to what Beto was saying, we have that luxury here at the tasting room. So when people come in, we can interact with them and say, even though you were expecting Chardonnay, let me tell you about Viognier or Tempranillo.
Carmenere
had a bit of an acceptance. There was this sort of Black Hills did a little bit of Carmenere. So people knew about it, but things like Tempranillo, especially Tempranillo, because Tempranillo never gets on the label in the old world. Yeah. It's always, you know, a Rioja or something like that. You know, ideas like Malbec are a little easier because everybody knows, you know, in South America, it's labeled as Malbec. It's not labeled by appellation. So the non-appellation, like Tempranillo, Tannat never generally makes it on the front cover, so to speak. Roussan Marsan.
Yeah.
That was tough.
It all got my attention, all of it, especially those two. This is week 5 of the Okanagan Reconnect. Those are the comments of Beta and Chris Tully, the passionate owners of Mooncursor in Osoyoos, and they are hosting us week 5 of this Okanagan Reconnect. We'll be right back with part 2 of the interview with them. We're also going to visit with the owners of Lariana, and we'll say goodbye to C.C. Yench through the words of Paula Cooper, who was the winemaker there. When we talk to her, it'll be the last day that C.C. Yench was open. We'll be right back. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Jason Parks Customs. Jason Parks Customs is a ragtag group of wineries, a cider house, and a brewery calling West Kelowna home. They are The Hatch, Black Sweat Vineyards, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59, Cider House, Smoke Show by JPC, and coming soon, The Hatching Post, a saloon-style brewery, smokery, and ice cream parlor. Just think about it. Details at Jason Park's Customs events. And a final word from JPC. An invite to join them for a safe and happy 2022. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Just a heads up on the winter hours at Moon Cursor. 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday to April the 13th. During the 2021 winter season, they offer two tasting experiences by appointment, guided wine tasting, and a private winemaker tour and tasting. All the details at mooncursor.com. And from everyone at Moon Cursor Winery in the Soyuz, they wish you the best of 2022. We're talking to Beta and Chris Tolley at Moon Cursor in the South Okanagan. You chose two wines to taste today. The Moon Cursor with the new label, by the way, friends. The Arnais, it's beautiful. It's handsome. It's cleaned up. It's just gorgeous. It's the 2020. It's the Little Rascal from Piedmont. And it's a single varietal. It's fantastic. Still the only one that we know being grown in Canada. Yes. It won how many golds did it win at the 2021 All-Canadian Wine Championships?
So the Arnais brought home a double gold medal, as did the other wine that we'll be tasting today, Dead of Night. And so we were, you know, quite pleased with that performance.
How pleased were you?
So pleased, Terry.
Very pleased. It is.
It's a lovely, you know, it's such a lovely pat on the back, especially for a variety that is fairly new to the Okanagan, and to have it be recognized, you know, as sort of worthy of that kind of accolade is fantastic.
Do you want to pour for His Majesty? I had the 19, but this is the 20. How much did the 2020 change from the 19?
The 2020 is much fuller, richer wine with still maintaining a bit of herbaceousness to it. So, and it's got a bit of Sauvignon Blanc style.
Best small winery in Canada.
Let's drink to that. Thank you, Terry.
Give me the tasting notes that you love most about Arnais.
The crispness, yeah. Sort of herbaceous and fruit qualities together in the wine. So it's got it's a nice fruit-driven wine, but it also has some earthy, sort of herby characters to it. Good structure, linear
structure. Great finish. Do you want to add to that?
The one thing that I always associate with our Arnais that seems to sort of transcend any seasonal differences is almost like a little bit of touch of, to me, it's like salinity, that kind of salty linear touch that to me is, you know, basically shows up every single year, and I quite enjoy that.
Do you think those Psalms and Masters of Wine that were tasting the All-Canadian Wine Championships, when they hit this Arnais, after tasting lakes of Pinot Gris and Chardonnay and whatever, Viognier, it just is such a stunning about turn left when they taste it that alone wins the day.
It definitely would be fun to be a fly on the wall during the tastings and just to see people's, you know, sort of initial reaction to the wine. We'd like to think that that's the case.
And then the next question would be, I wonder who made this? And then they all go, we know who made this. There's only one.
Yeah, that's actually...
long live blind tastings, I guess.
That happened with our Trigo Nacional when it won platinum, because they didn't taste it blind. So they're kind of like, are we really going to give a platinum to Trigo Nacional from the Valley? It's sort of an interesting sort of take on, you know, what's going on in the minds of the judges, as you said, when they taste the wines.
Now, here's the tricky part, Beta.
Yes.
You warned us going into this year that because of production, et cetera, that production would be down, but the wines would be just smashing.
Yes.
Is there any Arnais left?
There is no Arnais left. I feel like apologizing to everybody
to me?
About
to
that
me?
Too.
No Arnais for
it's,
me?
It's yes, and the speed with which the wine has disappeared from our tasting room surprised even us to the point where Chris and I were left scrambling, trying to find a couple of bottles for our private cellar at home. So it's Mother Nature, unfortunately, can be fickle, and even though the wines in during that season ended up with great concentration of flavor, quantities were affected because of the low cropping levels. And so sadly this year, and even a little bit next year, we're not going to have as much wine for sale as we normally would, but it's going to be top notch.
Thank you for sharing the 19 and for allowing me to taste this 20. This is fantastic. We're at Moon Cursor, as you can tell, with the new label.
Can I put you on the spot, Terry? I thought I'd say, well, did you try the 19?
I tried the 19, and then when the 20 came along, I...
Would you like to try them side by side?
Sure, you're the interviewer now.
Oh, it's just, I was wondering if what you thought of the difference between the two vintages.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the 19th has had a chance to settle in, right? Which is almost an unfair advantage because it gets comfortable in the bottle, and I'm kind of wondering. It begs the question: Can an anise cellar for a couple of years?
Yeah, it actually cellars quite well. It sort of gets a little petrol-y character, kind of like Riesling, as it ages. And the structure, because it's not so fruit-driven, like we were talking about a little bit of herbaceousness there, so it maintains its characteristics as it ages, but then it adds on the sort of developed petrol character to it. It's quite nice, actually, aged as well.
Bita, favorite pairing?
Seafood, shellfish. Yeah. But I actually find this wine to be quite versatile because even though it's a white wine, but it brings such nice heft and weight to the palate. It can actually stand up to quite a little bit more than you'd expect. And oysters. I mean,
Chris, what would you pair with?
Yeah, I like the shellfish idea. I like sort of the squid/octopus kind of.
How Italian of you?
Italian wine has come all this way. It expects to see friends when it gets here.
We should move on to Dead of Night. They're not in the shot, but we're talking to Bita and Chris Tolley at Moon Cursor in the South Okanagan, very close to the border. And, the only one closer is Lariana, and they're coming in this morning as well. Bita, while you're pouring, you can tell me that Dead of Night is also sold out?
Dead of Night is, unfortunately, very, very close to being sold out. We have, I think, under 10 cases left in the tasting room at the moment. So, yes, again, going to blame this on Mother Nature.
But you didn't do this on purpose. It's just the way the growing season worked.
Exactly. This is one of the, quote-unquote, joys of farming. We'd like to think that we're in control of what happens in the vineyard.
And you're not.
And we're absolutely not, except to just try and react the best way we know how to maintain, the integrity and the quality of the grapes that we bring in. But at the end of the day, who's kidding who? Mother Nature always wins.
When people come up to the counter and they ask for your reds and they're familiar with the Syrah, fine. But Dead of Night is a blend of Tannat and Syrah. Do you have to explain the Tannat still to this day?
A lot of our customers who now come into the tasting room are repeat customers, so they're quite familiar with the wines that we make, and they know our Tannat, and they like our Tannat. Those who don't, absolutely. There is a little bit of educating that needs to happen and explaining of what kind of wine that is. And of course, Tannat is such a unique beast of a wine in that it's big, it's robust, it's...
Damn, that's good. I'm sorry, now, that's really good.
What helps sometimes is mentioning that, Tannat, of course, is the flagship grape of Uruguay. And so we do get customers who are familiar with Tannat from
the French like it.
So it's an unusual blend, Syrah and Tannat. And Tannat, as Bita said, from southwest France, probably would have been a popular variety, but the Port of Bordeaux preferred to ship their own varieties and their own wines out before allowing the ones from south of France. And then Syrah from the Rhone. So they don't meet very often in France. But the synergy between the two of varieties is excellent.
And it changes. Is it Tannat driven this year?
It doesn't change much past 50-50. It might be a half barrel or something like that. And what's changed in the later vintages is Christian Scagnetti, who's now a winemaker here as well. He's really gotten into the oaking program and sort of try to find a synergy between the characteristics of the wine and some of the barrels. So we brought in a lot of different styles, and this being one of our premium wines, it always sees the best of his experiments with them.
Explain premium. I mean, these are select barrels. And just a handful, right?
Yes, we have several blocks of Syrah planted. So every year, what we do is basically focus on choosing the best blocks and also the best barrels for blending with the Syrah to create Dead of Night. And again, Chris can probably speak to this a little bit more, but ultimately what we're trying to do is hit that sweet spot, and it tends to be a little bit elusive because it's more magic than science sometimes, making wine and blending wine. But the idea is to get the Syrah and the Tannat working in harmony to create something that is more than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Lots of tasting.
How many cases of Arnaise are we not allowed to buy?
How many were there this year, Chris? I think just a little bit over 200, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a short.
And how many cases can't I buy of the Dead of Night?
Dead of Night, I think we clocked in at a little bit over 300. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact numbers here. But
now we come to your price points. Where's your notes? You ready? What's the Arnaise?
Arnaise, our tasting room price is $26.99.
If I had it, then I could buy it, fine. And the Dead of Night?
$42.99.
Okay. When we started this partnership and you came on board Tasting Room Radio as a sponsor, I was thrilled and delighted. You were then named Best Small Winery in Canada, right?
Yes.
And then all the and I was extremely busy when the next competition happened and those medals were boom, 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 boom. And I asked you this jokingly, but are you still the best small winery in Canada, or have they taken you to the big guys and said top 10 winery in Canada? What is it?
Well, I think this might just come down to a technicality at this point, but because of COVID last year, the National Wine Awards of Canada competition didn't happen. So,
didn't I see a press release that you were winning medals?
Oh yes, this was a different competition, all 2021 All Canadian Wine Competition. The results were just announced, and yes, we brought home 12 medals in total. Two of those were double gold, and I think three or four were gold. And so we were delighted.
As much as I like the title, the best small winery in Canada, they also have to take into consideration best winery in Canada, period. You can't just sidebar people. If it's a competition between wineries across the country, it doesn't matter how big or small. If you come in with your 13 or 14 medals, you should be top 10, top 5, top 3, whatever.
And we were. That in 2019, we were, I think, number two in all, you know, across Canada, all wineries of all sizes. So that was also to experience.
Did you remember your price point on Dead of Night?
Dead of Night is $42.99.
Okay, fine. What does the best small winery in Canada want to be when it grows up?
I basically would like to say that we have no plans to grow up. Right now we make about 7,000 cases a year, and we have, as you pointed out, you know, our fabulous team. We have a great vineyard team, we have a great tasting room and sales team, and it's just we're at a point where, you know, there seems to be real synergy amongst all of us that contributes to creating wines that we can be proud of. And so it feels like we are never really going to come to a point where Chris and I would like to step back even more. We're at 7,000 cases right now. I think maybe we can get our
10 is your limit.
10, yeah, and then that's going to be that's going to be the end.
Yeah. By the way, I would love to see, coming full circle, a shot of you out there on the highway with bottles in your left and right, and a little farm stand and a babushka. I'd love to see that.
Well, who knows what future will bring. Right now, you know, we're going to just invite everybody to come into our beautiful tasting room and enjoy the wine there.
With like two bottles like this and a handwritten
thing. That's right,
wine.
Handwritten.
Yeah.
Help my mom, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the support.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Just a heads up on the winter hours at Moon Cursor, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday to April the 13th. During the 2021 winter season, they offer two tasting experiences by appointment, guided wine tasting, and a private winemaker tour and tasting. All the details at mooncursor.com. And from everyone at Moon Cursor Winery in Soyuz, they wish you the best of 2022. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Here's some info on the winter hours at Unsworth. The tasting room is open Wednesday to Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the restaurant is open from Thursday to Saturday from noon to 8 p.m. Sunday from noon to 4. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com.
I have a very special guest fresh from her being talked about on Tasting Room Radio by Sandra Ofield. I'm welcoming to this Okanagan Reconnect Paula Cooper, a winemaker. And as talked about by Sandra Ofield, 10 years at Tin Horn?
Yeah, pretty close.
Was it a constant learning experience? Or once you learned what it was about, were you then allowed to just make your wines?
Absolutely. Sandra was, she was like an amazing mentor, amazing teacher. So you definitely, there was a huge focus on safe operating procedures. We always wanted to make sure that anybody new coming into the cellar was fully capable of doing every job. So we created really good procedures for that. So.
She took her winemaking seriously, didn't she?
Absolutely, yes. I kind of affectionately call her the tsunami because she was just out there in full force.
She's the force is what she is, yes.
Absolutely.
So I'm welcoming to this Okanagan Reconnect, Paula Cooper, a winemaker. After those 10 years at Tin Horn, you went where?
After 10 years, I did a quick stint at Artera because I'd never been at any other winery. So I was like, well, let's see how these big companies do it. So it doesn't take long after you've had some freedom in a cellar to kind of get bored of that because you kind of get stuck doing one job every day, in and out, day in, day out. So then after that, I was looking for something different. So I went on to Artis.
and you found something different at CC Yench.
Absolutely. Yeah, when Amber was doing her maternity leave, they were looking for another person to help with the cellar upon her return to the winery. And then when I arrived, I think she found out that just before she was going to return that she was expecting her second baby. Yeah, so that was really exciting for her. But then she decided, well, maybe I shouldn't come back because I'm just going to be leaving again, you know. So then it was, wow, this is my job now. Take over the whole process. So.
Did you like Chris Jentsch immediately as much as I did?
Oh, he was just a bear. Just awesome.
Yeah. And as my wife was pointing out on a drive yesterday, she was so impressed that we brought our grandson, Kyle, with us. And when Chris saw him, he immediately walked him around and showed him what and answered all of his questions.
Oh, yes, yes. Definitely. He was just everybody's greatest cheerleader.
So you're at CC Yench, and I made this booking with you, and you warned me that you were on the move again. Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, just with the pending sale of the property, Betty, you know, she doesn't want to carry on without Chris. So,
yeah, I mean, you always think of her and carrying on without Chris and vice versa. So you looked around or did somebody tap you on the shoulder and say, would you like to come here?
Well, I was fortunate enough to be approached by Ricky Dollywell from Lakeside Cellars, who is also the loving husband to Danielle Yench. So it's awesome. I get to kind of stick with the family and still watch the kids grow up. So,
But what happens to CC Yench now? What happens to this great family idea? We have a mutual friend in Chris Yench and CC Yench. Does the label disappear? How any idea how it's going to unfold?
Yes, unfortunately, this will be the end of our label.
Wow. And what will it become?
It will actually, what will happen is the property is going to be sold. So whoever purchases that property will rebrand it. They'll use the facility, but to create their own label.
The fact still remains is they're stepping into an incredible beginning for whoever it is. I hope they treat it with the reverence that Chris deserves. What's left of the portfolio? I mean, is there a fire sale at the...
Well, we're completely sold out of whites, so unfortunately we're not trying those today. But we do have a nice library release from 2012 all the way up to 2016 of the Syrahs.
No!
So this is a great opportunity for anyone that likes Syrah, because these are all available to taste as well. So you don't even have to guess if you're going to like that bottle. They are all available for tasting in our wine shop.
Right. How many years there?
Well, there's five library releases and one current vintage of Syrah.
Pretty damn good.
Yes, yes, definitely. And there's some pretty great ones there. Like the 2013 was given the Judgment of BC. That was the first year that they
I was judging.
Yeah, so they, you know, that was the first year the winery actually produced wine in its own building. So how phenomenal is that?
I phoned him. He said, where are you? He said, I'm on my tractor. I got to get out of the tasting room. This is crazy.
Yeah, he was very, I had so much autonomy working there. Like, Chris just didn't even want to have anything to do with the cellar. It was just like, okay, I'm going to do the grapes, you do the cellar.
Paula Cooper, a winemaker. So here's the deal. What did you learn at CC Jentsch that you can take to Lakeside and beyond?
Oh.
Because how many wineries, as we know, are making wines as concentrated and as beautiful as what Chris made? Mm-hmm. But you learned along the way. So it informs you. You now have been schooled and you can apply that to whatever you do.
Absolutely. You realize you go from working somewhere as great as Tinhorn Creek and you get kind of the instruction of, okay, you're going to add this or you're going to add that to the wines. And for a while, you're kind of like, why am I adding these things to the wines? You know, you don't really know. And then when you get moved into a position of winemaking, I always sort of class myself as a cellar master with the really cool label, because when you work by yourself in the cellar, you're doing it all. And then, you know, and I'm also helping in the wine shop. So it's like the nice thing about working at Jentsch is you just do so many things. Yeah. You're just involved with everything. You're involved with the vineyard, you're involved with the making of the wine and the selling of it. So.
And the humanity of it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Paula Cooper, a winemaker. CC Jentsch. So the Lakeside, you brought a bottle from Lakeside. What is it?
I did. It is their Portage White.
Okay. So Lakeside, Portage White. But I mean, how big is the portfolio?
At Lakeside Cellars, the portfolio is probably somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 cases. So. Okay. But they're making some lovely Bordeaux blend, the Provenir. They have some bubbles.
Yeah. And they have you.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because there's a lot of different varietals that I haven't had the opportunity to work with at Lakeside. Like, we're really excited. This is the first vintage of Sunso, which is going to be primarily made into rosé. So I think we're one of the first wineries in the Okanagan to use this for rosé. So we're pretty excited about that.
What's the date today, anybody? Is it the 9th?
The 8th of August.
Okay, as long as I'm around, on the 8th of August, I will phone you and we will open something and we will salute Chris Jentsch.
Absolutely fantastic.
As long as I can do it, I'm going to do it.
Love it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paula Cooper, a winemaker. CC Jentsch.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Here's some info on the winter hours at Unsworth. The tasting room is open Wednesday to Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the restaurant is open from Thursday to Saturday from noon to 8 p.m. Sunday from noon to 4. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabetta Bench. For your planning, wine tastings are closed until March of 2022, and the wine shop hours are daily, 12 noon to 5 p.m. Hillside Bistro will be open March of 2022. All the details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca.
We come, ladies and gentlemen, to the final interview of the 2021 Okanagan Reconnect. The whole idea behind this was to, having not been here for 2 years because of conditions, to get back as soon as possible. You can only do so many Zoom calls. You can only do so many Skype calls. You can only do so many phoners. You have to come back and go knee to knee with the people making the wines and get to see them again. And Lariana Sellers have graced us with the last interview, Dan and Carol Scott, who haven't traveled that far. This isn't a reach for them. They're just down the road. I'm at Moon Cursor, and we have some mutual friends. Your first plantings were consulted by Richard Cleave?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he was a longtime family friend of Carol's parents.
Brilliant move. You were asking him basically, what is this terroir? What is this soil going to give us? What do we want to plant here, right?
Yes, I remember getting him to come out in 2006 and walk the property.
He gave it a thumbs up?
Yeah, this is what you should plant, these varietals. This is where they're going to go. It was so exciting. I'll never forget. It was like, oh my God, we are going to do this.
That's fantastic to have someone say, this is what should go here.
Yes.
Yes.
With his experience in the valley.
Yep.
He knew what varieties would grow well at our end.
Yeah. Big reds can ripen down at our end. Cab Sauv. And then he said, plant some Viognier because it's the new white grape coming in.
Way to go, Richard. Dick Cleave, what year was that?
2006.
Can you remember what that first growing season, that first crush, that first bottle release was like?
Very exciting. Then we had help. Our consultant is Senka Tennant. So Senka came on board, and that was very exciting. And that also was partly due to Richard Cleave, or 100% due to. He had a chat with Senka and described us and our situation, and would she want to, and she had to have a little thought about it. Mm-hmm. We didn't know each other.
You bet. Because the first time I interviewed her, it was me that was auditioning, not her. She was checking me out because she doesn't exactly like talking into a microphone. But we did become friends. I greatly admired her as a person and as her work. And you follow her through Black Hills and Nota Bene and Terra Vista. I love the fact that they were growing those Spanish grapes on Naramata Bench. And then I was thrilled to hear that she was working with you. What did you need from her? What advice?
Well, we made amateur wine with a friend and all of her for years. And then once we started working with Senka, because we knew we didn't know enough to do it on a commercial level, and then we found out how much we didn't know about winemaking once we started working with Senka, but just her palate and her, there's the science to the wine, but hers is more of the art side of the, you know, intuition. And
yeah, she has it all. She is, we're so fortunate that she's come to help us. She's just an amazing woman.
And you found your place here. I mean, you know there are bigger, gaudier wineries, right? Were you happy to be able to grow and let people find you as you went along?
Yeah, I think it was interesting to have, not be on the beaten path. So people had to, if they were coming to us, they had to make a point of doing a bit of research. And
word of mouth was important.
Yes, word of mouth and a lot of the other wineries sending people our way, which was a huge help. Because we aren't on Black Sage Road where everybody just drives by.
It's been great, though. People have sent folks our way. It's taken a few years to get our name out there. But I think we're finally getting there. People are starting to recognize Lariana.
And which release was the first success, would you say?
Well, the 2012 Viognier, John Schreiner gave us
93 points.
Yes. Yeah, so that was like, wow. Some people came because, okay, we have to taste that wine.
And how many cases that year?
I think we did 200 cases of Viognier.
Now how many cases of Viognier?
This past vintage we're up 350, so not a lot more.
We are true garagist.
You are garagist, but there's pride in that. It is hands-on winemaking.
Yeah, we're probably 1,200 cases in total between white, our Viognier and our reds, so it is quite hands-on.
So the newsletter helped, and this is going to help. And my own word of mouth, because I have been recommending you guys for quite some time. I love the taste that I first came, and the Viognier just knocked my socks off. And you happen to bring one. And Lariana Sellers have graced us with the last interview, Dan and Carol Scott. This is the 2020 limited production.
340 cases, so so not very much.
You know what I like about this is it's not just winemaking, it's your career and it's also your life. You want to control your life because, as you know, the larger you get, the less life you have.
Exactly. I was going to say, we can't do any more work. So we're at a stage where we can kind of manage it.
Yeah.
We have a couple of helpers, which is wonderful. If we went bigger, that's a whole nother ball game.
And then there's more staff and more headaches and more time spent. So
I know you would have been open to Senka's suggestions and guidance. How has she helped to create, like, for example, the Viognier on the table?
She's all about the gentle processing, gentle pressing, and
tasting the grapes in the vineyard when it's getting ready for harvest.
That's one of the hugest decisions.
The science is easy. Anybody can take sugar and pH and acid tests, but it's her flavor of tasting the grapes, walking through, and I follow her and try and pick a grape off the same cluster and try and get those flavors imprinted in my head. Because she's, you know, we think, oh, the numbers are there, we're ready to go. And she'll say, no, another few days. And
she probably kicked my ass if I asked her this question, but I kind of wonder how much of it is gut instinct, because she knows so much.
I think a lot of it on her part is just the feeling she gets when she's out there.
Yeah. And that's it. That's what you're getting with Senka Tennant.
And she's very thoughtful, wise, and then, okay, guys, this is my thoughts. And it's like, of course, Senka, we're going with it. Why would we not?
First of all, just surrounding yourself with those people, it's wonderful, because you know the wines are going to be great. And you know what? Nobody has to be sold at the counter. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. Pour me what's available and let me decide how much I'm taking away.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
340 cases. What's the price point on the Viognier?
$27.
Well done. After all that work?
Yes.
It sometimes seems like it's not enough, but for the hours that we put in, but it's where we feel it fits into the market.
Where are we going to be able to find it?
We're sold out at the winery right now, but there are some stores in the valley here and Lower Mainland on the island.
There is a little page, I think it's under Find Our Wines, but there's a few fabulous stores in the Lower Mainland and up the valley, area wines. So.
Restaurants?
We are in quite a few restaurants in the Lower Mainland and up here and in town here, which is nice that it seems the last, when we first, our first vintage, the 2012, our blend 12, we didn't have any representation at that point. So me and Carol would load up the car and phone, try and make appointments with the sommeliers.
And who are you?
Great. And another winery in the Okanagan.
There you go.
But we had a great first experience.
Yes. We went into Gotham's. And their sommelier there.
Christopher McFadden.
He
loved the wines and he took it right off the start, which was really, really weird.
Did he take the entire production?
No.
Some do.
And we didn't have very much, but he put it on the list.
Yeah, he doesn't know. We were so excited that day. I don't think our feet were on the ground. He was like, take it. Yeah. So
wonderful. Yeah. I love that Viognier. Let's talk reds for just a second then. Lariana Sellers have graced us with the last interview, Dan and Carol Scott. Talking to Lariana. Bring that red over here for just a moment. Thank you. I love coming here. I don't know who turned me on to it. Somebody was kind enough to say, you should pay attention here. This is a 2018.
It's been 16, 18 months in oak, generally.
New oak, French?
80%-ish French. And probably 30% new each vintage. Yeah. Senka's not wanting to have too much new oak on the wine, so, and she likes to have some American oak
on the Carmenere. Yeah, definitely.
Seems to do well for her experience from Black Hills.
Do you still have to explain what the varietal is to some people?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, they say, what's in that blend? What is that Carmenere?
I mean, there's only, that we have right know that there's only five of us growing it in the valley here, or producing. There's probably more growers, but there's only five of us producing Carmenere, so Mooncruiser being one.
Yeah. And how different is theirs from yours?
It is quite different.
It's amazing. We do a tasting sometimes.
And you're only, how many kilometers?
Three
kilometers away.
But just the different side of the valley, too. Yeah. It's a little hotter in the afternoon on this side. So a little bit different flavors and different soil structure,
too. Different soil.
Now that our vines are getting a little older, Senkasphere, now it's really starting to come into the Carmenere notes.
Absolutely. They're deeper. They know who they are. They know what they are, right? Mm-hmm. So now come the hard questions. How many cases?
This 18 Carm was our largest vintage ever. It was just around 300. Mm-hmm. Most years we're lucky if we get 200. It's Not a high-yielding plant.
So. You guys just killed me. And the price points?
This is $52.
Okay. Is there any left?
A little bit. We have a very small amount at the winery, and then it is in a few stores around, but not a lot because we just don't make very much.
Is the tasting room open?
Not this summer.
No.
Our wine club just grew like crazy. The numbers went up. And with COVID and people not traveling, the online orders were amazing.
And will next year be different?
The 2019 vintage was smaller, so I don't know if we'll even have enough to open. We'll see, I guess, in the spring.
Once we satisfy the wine club members, and there's not a lot left.
You guys.
I know.
You've caused this. Okay. Can I have a taste, please? I need a drink. Thank you. Wonderful. Is it wrong to just want pepper?
No, it is very peppery.
Yeah, it's some nice white pepper and
A little more savory than fruity.
For those of you thinking, well, what's going on in the bottle? White pepper, spice, wood, cedar box or cigar box or whatever. Everything's going on in this bottle. It's fantastic. It's a 2018. What's the cellar life of the coming year?
10 years plus. We don't have a long track record yet because our wines aren't that old, but Senka figures at least 10.
And what happens in those 10 years? How does it change in the bottle?
Tannins soften a little bit. I mean, it's not a very high tannic wine to start with. Just the flavors soften a little bit. And
okay. And where are we with the number series, by the way? What number are we up to?
18 will be released in the end of this month.
Primarily cab?
Yep, this vintage is 54% cab, 26 Syrah, and 20 Carmenere. So it changes each year.
That's crazy. How many cases?
The blend was 375-ish, something like that.
What's the number on it?
Price point?
No.
Oh.
The label?
18.
18, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, we name our blends for the
and now the price point?
47.
So you do have something to sell.
Coming up in the fall, yes. And our 2018 Cab Sauv, 100% Cab Sauv will be coming out at the same time.
So. Oh, man. There's so many ways I could go with this. Were you the first concrete users?
No. When we were looking to buy our equipment in 2011, we still hadn't decided. We decided to do the winery. We sold our grapes for a couple of years to other wineries. And then in 2011, we decided to take the next step. Yeah. And we spoke to Michael Barthier when he was the winemaker at Okanagan Crush Pad.
Yeah.
And they had six of the concrete eggs.
Those original six.
Yeah, so we saw that and talked to him about, you know, they're doing their side-by-sides in stainless and concrete. And we were quite intrigued, so we decided to order one right from the start.
Did you like?
Mm-hmm. That's what our Viognier is predominantly in concrete, and we bought another small vessel.
Did it change the texture?
Yeah, it's a little creamier, richer, a little bit of minerality, but nice for temperature control, so we can ferment it at a nice constant temperature. So we're quite happy with the concrete.
Okay. If you want to talk to the actual wine fan, what message you want to give them in terms of Lariana, about why it might be in their might be interesting to follow you, to get the newsletter, to just follow what's going on. There's a story here. Anyone? I'm looking at you.
I know you are. What would I do to come out and try it? You have to try it, taste it. We're new at this young, but our consultant has years of experience and knowledge, and it shows in the wines. It's just magnificent.
You listen well. When she talks, you listen.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, of course, why wouldn't we?
Yeah. She is so passionate about it. You know the wine's going to be passionate. You know the wine's going to be complete, and you're very proud of it. You are proud of it, don't you?
Oh, absolutely,
very
yes.
proud. And we're so proud to have worked alongside her in those first couple of years. She went through everything with us, you know, just every step of the way, and what fun we've had. And we have lots of fun still with her.
And going forward, will you be the same people? Will I see you next year?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Not planning on changing, planting a little bit more fruit. We've got some a little bit more land on our property that we're going to develop.
What do you want to plant?
We plant another 500 Carmenere just spring, and then another 2,500 plants are going in next spring, so more Carmenere and more Capsof. We just don't grow enough of it. And
for a total production of?
We'll have about 8 acres planted in vines, so our production...
It'll still be under 2,000
yes.
cases.
Garage East.
Yes, yep. Yes, all the way.
On the border. Thank you very much for guesting and for concluding this journey for me.
It was our pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
Okay.
Wonderful.
And Lariana Sellers have graced us with the last interview, Dan and Carol Scott.
A huge thank you to the 25 guests who joined us over this five-week journey. Thank you for your stories, and thank you for the wonderful wines that you've given all of us. I'd like to thank At Tota, Ellen Walker Matthews, and Rob Griffone for giving me such great support. Way to go, Tota, and the Tota team. Corey Wood, who handled all the videos and the support, just for being Corey Wood. Meg Mulligan here at home. And our hosts, The Hatch, Hillside, Noble Ridge, and Moon Cursor. And Tina Baird on the Aromata Bench. I hope you enjoyed this. We're going to do it again. Now, maybe it's time to organize your own journey to the Okanagan, but enjoy yourself. Have a great time. And we'd like to dedicate this entire show to the memory of the great Chris Yench at CC Yench. This segment of Tasting Rum Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabetta Bench. For your planning, wine tastings are closed until March of 2022, and the wine shop hours are daily, 12 noon to 5 p.m. Hillside Bistro will be open March of 2022. All the details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. Tasting Rum Radio's 2021 Okanagan Reconnect is presented by the Thompson Okanagan Tourism Association, home to over 90 communities and over 200 wineries. Tota is proud to share with the world this beautiful place they call home, asking our guests to travel respectively and responsibly so that this region may be enjoyed by all who live and visit for years to come.